Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight I want to welcome Dr. Irena Scott. Her publications include books and works in peer-reviewed scientific journals, magazines, and newspapers. And her photography has also been shown on television and in magazines, books, and newspapers. The Defense Intelligence Agency employed her in PhD-level research in satellite photography, including in its Air Order of Battle section, which involved aircraft identification with above top secret sensitive compartmented information clearances. She served on the MUFON Board of Directors 1993 to 2000 and is a MUFON consultant in physiology and astronomy and a field investigator. She has taken a scientific approach to the UFO phenomenon and published papers about UFO data in peer-reviewed scientific journals, including the American Association for the Advancement of Science Publications. Dr. Scott, welcome. How are you tonight?
Just fine. How are you?
I'm very good. Thank you so much for joining us. I've been looking forward to tonight because you've done years of research into the phenomenon and have been to facilities like Wright-Patterson Air Force Base with high-level clearances, working with individuals that probably know about black projects and have been involved with possibly exotic materials, craft, and even beings. And you've also had a few of your own personal experiences. And that's where I'd like to start tonight. I understand even as a child you had a strange experience at your house. Is that right?
Yes, I did. It was when my sister and I were real young kids. I think maybe I was six and maybe she was four. And we had never heard of UFOs or anything. We were poor and lived in a farmhouse out in the boondocks and didn't have newspapers or TV or anything. And what happened was is that we slept in an attic room on both sides, one bed on one side and one on the other. And one night after we went to sleep and it was dark, and it was actually, I should mention, it was a clear night too, no storm. We woke up. I didn't know she was awake and she didn't know I was awake, but we both apparently woke up at the same time and this thing was flying around in our room. And I had no idea what it was and neither did she. And we didn't say anything to each other because we both thought each other was asleep, but it looked like hot metal. And I didn't know what it was, but I was just curious, just like, what on earth is that? And just watched it. And it flew around the room, and it was just kind of like it was browsing. And it came close to us a couple of times. And it looked to me just like hot metal, real hot metal, like iron that's heated until it glows. And it was fairly small. And it was flying around the room. And then after a while, it was kind of browsing, like it was just looking around or something. That's a subjective opinion. But after a while, it flew up to the ceiling. What was odd about it was is that it didn't bump into anything. I mean, if it came to a wall, it would turn before it got to the wall. If it came to furniture, it would turn. And so it was like it knew what was in the room. The room was dark. But it didn't bump into anything or even back up. It just seemed to know where everything was.
Wow, that's very interesting. Did it make any sound?
No. And it flew up to the ceiling, toward the ceiling, and before it got there, it turned. And there was a chandelier in the middle of the room that was turned off. And it flew across the ceiling. It was in an attic room, and the walls slanted up toward the ceiling instead of being straight walls. There was about a 3-foot distance between the top of the two walls. And the chandelier was between the top of them. Well, it flew to the chandelier, but didn't quite make it to the chandelier. And it started circling, and it circled just perfectly between the chandelier and the walls, just like it knew where everything was. And it kept circling and circling and circling and circling. And then it just made a perfect spiral down under the chandelier. The spiral kept getting smaller and closer to like a line right straight down from it. And then suddenly, we both became terrified just all of a sudden, and started shrieking and ran from the room and fell down the stairs because we bumped into each other and ran shrieking to our parents, and they didn't believe us. But it was pretty funny because it was years before we ever heard of UFOs, and it was many years after that before we thought that might be a UFO. But so we had no idea what it was and didn't have any exposure to even the idea of aliens or UFOs or anything at the time.
Wow. And that was the so that was the last event for a good while that occurred that was paranormal or UFO.
Yeah, I read many years later a book by Jenny Randles who said that sometimes people have experiences when they're kids, like with small UFOs in their bedroom, and then they have experience with larger ones. And I think that kind of happened to us, but it was many, many years before I read that. And at the time when we finally heard of UFOs, we just thought of those as airplanes or something and didn't think of little things flying around the room.
Right. And you actually had another experience, I believe it was with your sister as well, when you were driving, right? And this was with an actual craft.
Yeah. We're kind of weird because usually that happens to one person, that they have an experience when they're young and old. And in our case, we both had it together. So, you know, nobody could say you're crazy because we both saw it. When we were older, we were both living on the coastal states. She was in New Jersey up by New York and going to Drew University. And I was working for the Defense Intelligence Agency. And we decided to take a trip to the New England states because we just hadn't been, you know, around the East that much and hadn't been to the New England states. And so we were just going on a vacation. The last thing in our minds were UFOs. And so we were going up to look around Boston and the New England states, and we went up to Boston, and it was still daylight. And so we went on up to New Hampshire. And later I found out that the place where we kind of were in was kind of the last part of where the Betty and Barney Hill encounter took place. But we didn't know it then. But anyway, we came back and we were going to stay all night in Boston. But it turned out everything seemed to be filled up and closed. And so we were going to go look around the outer belt of Boston for a place to stay. And as we were leaving Boston, we began to see this thing to our south. I don't know how late it was at night, but it was definitely dark and everything by then. It was, you know, reasonable clear night, I think. There wasn't any storm or anything. And we were going out toward the outer belt, and you could see airplanes, and there was a airport south of Boston called, I think it was the Norwood Memorial Airport. And we could see airplanes coming in and turning on their landing lights and landing, and they looked like normal airplanes. They'd have, you know, the red and green lights and the landing lights and stuff, and no problem. But there was this other thing we kept seeing, and it was just one white light, but it kept blinking, and not real fast like a strobe, just slowly. And my sister started saying she thought that was a UFO, and I started saying, oh, it's a helicopter. And so we were arguing, and we turned on the outer belt, and I was getting kind of mad at her because she kept looking at the thing and saying, what is that? And I thought we should be looking for hotels or motels. And so we followed it down. It was real noticeable. But I kept telling her it was a helicopter blinking its landing lights, which I'd never seen before, but that's the only thing I'd think of it might be. Right. And so she said later that it would move real fast and it would be one place and then it'd be someplace else. And I wasn't watching it at all. You couldn't help but notice it, but I just thought, well, you know, anything. If it were a UFO, all the police and everything would be out looking at it, and it'd be on the radio and everything. And so we got on Route 95, which is the north and south freeway that goes up along the coast, and we were going down there, and there was a woods, and I saw this thing in the woods that was like a round thing. It was like a like sort of like a baseball that you could see through, like it was glass or something, and on the inside of it was a light, and it was going through a spectrum. Like, it was different shades of blue and different shades of red. And it would just go through the spectrum. And it seemed to have something on the outside, like a thin band that seemed to be rotating around. And I couldn't imagine what it was. And then the inside of our car lit up in green. And, you know, now I know about UFOs and I've heard of things like that, but back then I didn't know a thing. And I couldn't imagine what was going on. And I looked all over to see if anything else was green, and nothing else was green. And the light in the woods wasn't green. And it was kind of close to the ground. And I had no idea what it was. And my sister kept saying that she thought that was a UFO. And I kept arguing with her. And so we continued driving, and the car was lit up in green for a while, and then it went off, the inside of the car. I couldn't see anything on the outside, though, that was green. And then my sister started yelling at me to stop because the thing was going to go over the road. And so I stopped and pulled over, and I pointed my hand out the window, and I was going to say, "See, it's a helicopter, dingbat." And then I realized that she was wrong. I mean, that I was wrong. And the first thing I saw when I looked out was like a real far distant meteor. And then this thing came over the trees. And it was definitely not a helicopter. It was totally silent. And we could see these big square windows. There were seven of them. And it was just like we were real close to a house or something, looking in the windows. They were just windows. It looked like windows. We discussed whether they were panels or not, and we both thought they were windows. It was like we were seeing through windows. It wasn't like panels, but they were blinking in a sequence of, and I'm not too sure what the sequence was. It was like the first three were off and on and off and on, and then all seven were off and on, and then the last four were off and on. And then it stuck the cycle again. And it was really bright light on the inside. And we kept saying, do you see pilots? And we didn't see anything. It was just like the walls inside were glowing, but it was awfully bright. And it had one little red light on one end and one little green light on the other. It didn't blink at all. It was going like perpendicular to our line of sight. It wasn't coming toward us or anything. And so I had a Polaroid camera in the car and high-speed film 3000 ASA it just happened to have with me. And so I got them both out and started trying to load the film in the camera. It's sort of hard with those old Polaroids because you had to clean the rollers and things like that. And I was loading them. And I was about ready to take a picture. And this truck driver came over in front of us and parked. And he came back. And I thought, oh, this is nice. We'll have somebody else, you know, another witness. Won't this be great? And he came back and stood right beside me and said, "What are you doing?" Or "What are you, you know?" And we looked, I pointed at it and said, "Oh, we wondered what that was." We didn't say UFO or anything. We just acted like it was an airplane because, you know, he was a man and we were standing there, and that makes you nervous. But anyway, we pointed at it, and he turned around just exactly the opposite direction. He just rotated around and looked in exactly the opposite direction of where it was and said, "I don't see anything." And then he was sort of, I was nervous around a man anyway that was standing beside me in the dark in the middle, you know. Right. And so anyway, he turned back. And then he asked me the same question again. And we both pointed because there was this big thing up, you know, that you could see like crazy. And he turned around and pointed his head in the opposite direction again and said, "I don't see anything." And then he sort of pointed his head like, you know, the crazy sign. And he went back to his truck and sat there and kept watching us. Well, I had just missed the best picture you could ever imagine because I was talking to him and I was scared to take the picture. And, you know, I could just take a great picture and I knew about photography and everything, but it was a little too late by the time I finished talking to him. And my sister said that I think apparently while I was talking to him or something that the object had gone real fast and moved someplace else. And I didn't catch that until many years later when I read her report. And then I realized she was probably right. But I still wanted to get the picture. And I was afraid, it was a high-speed film, but I was afraid I'd get light from the freeway in the film. And so there was a hill beside us. And I ran up the hill. And the hill was bald on top so that I could see the thing and tried to focus. It was handheld and everything. And I took some pictures of it. It was way off in the distance, but I still got the pictures and came back. And I forgot to mention that right when we first saw it, my sister said that it shined a light in the car. And I didn't see that either. But we didn't fill out the forms for CUFOs until many years later, but we didn't discuss it much either. And I had made notes right when it happened to make sure I could report it. I was working for the DIA, so I certainly didn't want to report it then, but I intended to report it later. But anyway, then I took the pictures, and one of them turned out. And the thing went over to the airport, and it started circling. And it would circle in this thing of, during the north to south part of the circle, it would turn its lights on twice. It'd turn them off, on, off, on. And then when it went from north to south, the other part of the circle, it was so fast you couldn't even see it. It was just like instantly. And that was weird too. And we heard noises like, it sounded like a jet or like a sonic boom or something. But it didn't seem to be in phase with the movement of the object. And so I was trying to figure that out. But then what happened was is that I didn't know where it would go, and we wanted to follow it and try to figure out what it was. And so I thought it was going to go north because just a little bit north of us. And I didn't really know. But anyway, I thought I'd get on the freeway and go to the next interchange and turn the car around and come back. And so I got on the freeway. Well, the spooky man that we had talked to.
Yeah, yeah.
He was in a truck. It was like a large U-Haul. And he started following us. And it wasn't like he was following us, it's like he was chasing us. He got right behind me, right behind my bumper, turned his bright lights on, and truck lights are a little higher than car lights, and so they shone right in my mirror, and I was just blinded. And I couldn't see, and I was driving on the freeway, and I had this truck right behind me, and if I switched lanes, he switched lanes, and if I slowed down, he slowed down. He stayed right on my bumper, and I was fairly terrified. And I didn't know how to get rid of him or what to do. And I finally decided what I'd do is to go to the next interchange and from the left-hand side of the road so he wouldn't suspect that I'd swerve off the road. And that was real dangerous because somebody might be coming faster behind us. And I was going as fast as the car would go anyway. And so I asked my sister if she could see behind us, and she said no. And I don't think she realized we were in danger either. And so anyway, I got to the next intersection, swerved, and got rid of him, which I was happy about. And so, anyway, I turned around and started back north. And the thing was still circling the airport. And we had, when we were watching it, we had seen airplanes not landing while it was circling. And we discussed it, and we could hear the airplanes, but we couldn't hear the thing. We never heard the thing, aside from that sonic boom type thing we heard. And so then we came north, and we got about to where it was, and it started northwest. And so we followed it, but the roads went north and south and east and west, so it was hard to follow. We had to zigzag. But anyway, I followed it, and there was that green, that thing on the side of the road that was changing colors, and the inside of the car lit up in green again. And then we kept on following it, and we followed, finally, we went on 95, and then we went on the outer belt, and then we went on another road that went west, and then I found this gravel road that was really bad, and it was had potholes, and the houses were a long ways away from each other, and you couldn't turn around, and so I started following it on that, but it was just so that it just went to the speed. It was pretty slow, but I couldn't go any faster in the car than what I did because of the potholes and everything. And finally, I just gave up because I thought I'd tear the car up. And so I turned around, and we couldn't find any motels, and we finally went all the way back to Drew, and we got back there about 6. And Bud Hopkins had asked me if we had missing time, and I think we could have, but we didn't have our watches. And so we called our parents and told them what happened, and told our roommates, which laughed at us and everything. And I was supposed to pick up 2 coworkers I'd taken up there, and I couldn't, somehow they couldn't get me. I don't know why. But anyway, I stayed all night, and then I waited the next day to get my coworkers, and they wouldn't, somehow they just didn't see, they were real mad at me the next day and said they couldn't get me, but they knew where we were. And so I went back to Washington, D.C., and then that night I had poltergeist experience, so it was quite a adventure.
Wow, so you had a poltergeist experience after that. That is crazy. Now, I want to go back to the strange guy that you were trying to get him to look at this object, and he was looking the opposite direction, you said?
Uh-huh.
Now, do you think that he was somehow connected to this phenomenon in any way? I mean, he started chasing you. That's very odd.
Well, yeah, and I'm thinking about it later. If you're a person and you point at something, well, the person looks and say, look at that, and you point at something. Well, the person looks where you're pointing. And somehow, he didn't have a human. Even with a dog, if you point at it, they look in the direction you're pointing. And we pointed, and he asked us, what are you doing? What are you looking at or something? And we pointed. And both times, he just turned and looked in the exact opposite direction. And so I think from that maybe he was connected with the UFO instead of being a normal person. I mean, that was because it seemed like such an odd reaction, and he did it twice.
That is very strange. And you said you had a paranormal experience after. I find that with a lot of people that have UFO encounters and contact experiences, that there's also some sort of paranormal encounter that they have sometime in their life. Is that something you've come across in your research?
Well, at the time, I had never heard of poltergeists, or I didn't know much. I was in science. I had my degree in science and everything. I didn't know anything about that. And I thought I was going insane. But what happened was is that night when I got back to Washington, I was in my apartment, and it was dark, and I went to bed, and I started hearing footsteps in my apartment, like there was a man walking around with shoes, and they would start and stop someplace, and then they'd start and stop someplace, and there was a little bit of light coming in, but I couldn't see anybody. And when it got close to my bed, I'd try to feel it, and there was nothing there. And I just couldn't figure out what was going on. And I was terrified, but I went to sleep. And then my alarm went off, and I thought it was morning, and I got up and started making breakfast, and I thought, it's dark. It's not the right time. And I looked at my clock, and it was 1:30, and it was the alarm was set at 1:30. And I couldn't figure that out because it was real hard to set my alarm anyway because the little nub had broken off, and I couldn't turn it. I usually used pliers, and it was set right on 1:30. And I tried to set it back on 6:30 whenever I got up. And I was terrified, and I put a chair against the door. But I went to sleep again, and then the alarm went off again. And it was 2:30, and I went to sleep again. And the alarm went off, and it was 3:30. Then it went off at 4:30. I think it went off at 5:30. And I couldn't figure out what was going on there because I couldn't figure out how I could. In order to see the alarm, I needed the clock and set it. I couldn't set it anyway that accurately because I couldn't twist it. And I'd need to turn the light on to set it. And I think, you know, if I did that, I would know it. And so I couldn't figure out how the alarm kept getting set. And then after that, I was sitting on my bed and I was afraid I'd just gone insane. And I had this real high security clearance, and so I was afraid to lose my job. And I was thinking, how can I disguise it if I'm crazy and having hallucinations? And then my toothbrush just flew from one end of the to the other and hit the wall. And then everything was over with, thank heavens, and it didn't happen.
Wow. And that was it? That's the phenomenon just kind of ended after that?
Well, I didn't know what was going on, and it was years later that I read about the people that have UFO experiences may have poltergeists, and I had never even heard of poltergeists, and the only thing I thought at the time was I'm going insane, but it stopped happening, and I went to work, and I wasn't insane, so things turned out, and then, you know, many years later, I found out about all that.
Yeah, the more I research the phenomenon, it seems that there are a lot of connections with the paranormal. A lot of people who experience it also have paranormal experiences. It goes very deep when you start to research this stuff. Is this experience, the UFO experience, is that what kind of got you interested in the research?
Yeah, eventually. It was years after that before I got into it, though. I mean, I always intended to report it. And that night, after the poltergeist experience in the morning, well, I took back then they had legal pads, and I wrote everything in detail so that I'd have a record of it because I intended to report it sometime, but it was years and years and years before I reported it. And I was in science, and, you know, I definitely wouldn't report it when I was working for the DIA with a high security clearance, but it was quite a few years later before I reported it.
Now, how did you get involved working with the Defense Intelligence Agency?
Well, I had always wanted to be an astronomer ever since I was a kid. And I majored in it in college, but when I looked for jobs, they didn't hire females. And I would apply, go to them to apply, and they would refuse to give me an application, and they'd say it's male only and everything. And so I couldn't get into that. I mean, maybe there were some ways to get in, but we were poor and I didn't know a thing about anything, so I kept applying, and everybody kept saying, we're not going to hire you, we're not going to give you a application, and so on. And so they were mapping the moon and things. And so I tried to get into cartography, first of all, and I got into cartography working for the government. But when I got my security clearance, instead of working for the moon, they put me in this satellite photography stuff. And then I decided to go to the DIA and see what my luck was there. But instead, I was still in satellite photography over, you know, Russian territory and that sort of thing. And so I never got into astronomy, but that's how I got into that to start with.
Now, when it comes to what our government is doing, when it comes to UFO research, first of all, do you think that we have certain black projects that have actually reverse engineered craft? And if so, how much of the UFO and UAP phenomenon we see today is actually our own military and black projects?
I don't know, because I think if we had real UFOs, that we'd take over the world, and so I don't think we have them. I could be wrong, but they seem a lot more complicated than our aircraft to me, from what I've read about them, that they can merge and, you know, go into different, one will be flying around and it can change its appearance, or orbs can change their appearance, and they can have things come out of them or go back in, and things like that, which seem much more advanced than our aircraft to me.
Now, you know, based on some of the information in your books, you obviously, you know, believe that there is some sort of cover-up, which I believe as well. You know, based on your experience working with high-level clearances, what are some of the experiences or red flags that you come across that would lead you to believe that there are cover-ups in progress?
One thing is that working for the Defense Intelligence Agency, they kept pretty well track from satellite photography of all the aircraft that, I mean, well, I was working on like Russian things, but I think they kept track of all the aircraft every place. They had what you'd call targeting information, and they knew all the airports every place, and they watched for, you know, every type of aircraft and things. And I think now they probably have videos of all the aircraft all over the world with their satellite photography. And so I would think from that that they would have, you know, videos of UFOs too. But, you know, they never say anything about it, but I would certainly imagine that they do.
Now, you've actually worked at Wright-Patterson Air Force Base. Did you ever witness anything there that was unusual, or anything that would lead you to believe there's underground facilities, or anyone that you've talked to there that has given you any information along those lines?
I didn't work there. I had been sent for conferences and stuff and been allowed on base, and I also knew somebody that worked there, the archivist, and he gave us a tour too. And so I'd been on base. There's a lot of informants. Like if you just go to Dayton, Ohio and sit around, and once I was in a restaurant looking at a UFO book, and somebody just came up to and started talking to us and said, well, he knew his uncle who worked there, and they had, you know, knew where all the bodies were and everything. And you hear that all the time, and that's what Leonard Stringfield wrote books on. But Wright-Patterson is very, very, very secured. It has the Air Force Museum, which is a family-friendly place and everything. And you think, you know, you just think of the Air Force Museum, but all the rest of it is surrounded by chain-link fences and guard posts and everything. And the public isn't allowed in. So you can't just browse through and look for bodies or anything like that. But there's a lot of stories about it. And since I had been on base, I just roamed around, looked at the buildings and took pictures and things. Not obviously, but, you know, I took pictures. And there were a lot of places where people had said and that their informants said that there were underground chambers and vaults and storage places. And in several buildings, for example, one of them was the avionics laboratory, which is a big building. And informants had said that there's a big elevator in it where big trucks can go down and go into these chambers, and that that's where they keep the bodies and the UFOs and crash and debris and stuff. Well, when I was driving around, in back of the building where you couldn't really see it from any place except on base, there was this big ramp that went to the building. And it was a real heavy-duty ramp, like about four lanes with very built-up and everything, so that big trucks could go in. And then there were doors that were real tall. And it did look like trucks probably went in there. So that sort of checked out. And once the story was is that in the parking lot beside the building, that that was where the buried chamber was. Once driving around there, I saw a whole lot of digging around there with big diggers that went down deep. And it didn't look like they were just resurfacing or anything. It looked like they were digging deep. So that made me think that maybe there were chambers down there. Another place that was really interesting was, have you ever heard of the Blue Room?
I was just about to ask you about that. You read my mind. First of all, explain for those that don't know what the Blue Room was supposedly used for.
It was supposed to be a place that had bodies and that the story was it had the bodies and it had crash debris and UFOs and things. And Goldwater had asked about going to see the Blue Room. And the person he asked got real mad at him and said, don't talk about that again. And some other people had been trying to get in to see it and been rejected. Well, the archivist on his last day of work there invited another person and I into the meeting in this really, really, really secured building. And we attended a meeting about UFOs, and I wasn't really impressed with the secured building. I didn't know anything about it. It was the National Air and Space Intelligence Center. And years later, that was identified in a book by Tom Carey and Don Smith as the Blue Room. And so we were in there, but we didn't know at the time I was pretty impressed, but I'd have been a lot more impressed if I knew that was considered the Blue Room. When I didn't know a thing about it, when I was just on base looking around, the area is real secured with chain link fences and everything, but there's this one building that was a whole lot more secure than everything else, and it had cameras on the top and all these instruments around the on the lawn and everything else, and it was that building, and that now has been identified as the Blue Room. But at that time, I was just impressed with its security. But I think it's possible it was, because it was certainly secured, a lot more secured than any other building there.
Now, do you think if there was any type of projects going on dealing with UFOs or alien bodies, do you think that any of that is still going on at Wright-Patterson?
I don't know. There's all kinds of stories that they moved everything to someplace else in Area 51 or someplace else and all that. And I just don't know. There's just the informant stories. I don't really know, because I was in the Blue Room type building, but it just, the part I saw just looked like an office. I think there's laboratories and things like that. And I also thought there were probably, I mean, I'm sure there's underground storage under it because it has really high classified stuff in it. And so it'd be real compartmentalized. And I think hardly anybody gets into that building too. So I don't know. There's just the informant stories.
Right. Is there any other stories from informants you find to be quite profound or intriguing?
I guess it's been more explored by other people than me. I just sort of tried to go around and check out things where other people had said there might be something going on. There's stories in different places. One of them is Hangar 18, and that's been usually identified as this building 18 that is inside the secured area. But I talked to somebody that was old-time type Dayton person, and he said it was an actual hangar and pointed out which one it was in the group of hangars. And so I looked up information on the hangars, and these were there in 1947. And the runway was right by these hangars back in 1947. So that it's possible that I had some good information that was pretty hardcore that they brought Roswell debris into Wright-Patterson. And that would be a logical place to unload it, because that was right by the runway. And then maybe Building 18 was where they took it after that.
Very interesting. Now, you've also done a lot of research into the original Project Blue Book. What are your thoughts on it? Do you think it was mainly a debunking or disinformation campaign? Or do you think they were genuinely trying to get, information behind the phenomenon?
I think there were two parts of it. I think there was the public part, and I think it was debunking. But I think there was another part that was classified, that they were trying to figure out what was going on with the UFOs.
Now, end, you think it just turned out to be, more of a debunking type of a project. That's what it seemed to kind of end up being. And they moved everything else to other black projects after that, right?
Yeah. And I can't imagine that they just threw everything away and discarded it. I imagine they moved it into other black projects. But I think they were actually, it started out, Project Blue Book, it started out as Project Sign, way back before they changed the name into Blue Book. And Project Sign was pretty scientific, and they came to conclusions that the UFOs may be extraterrestrial or something that we just don't understand, which is not the conclusion that Project Blue Book came to. It came to the conclusion that there's nothing dangerous about UFOs or whatever, that they're not national security. I don't know how they could possibly conclude that when they don't know what they are. But it seemed like it started out as Project Sun. They did a real, their components of that were pretty scientific. And then it turned into Project Grudge, which was debunking. And then Blue Book, which I think actually tried to, the classified part was trying to figure out more about UFOs, and the public part was debunking them.
Now, have you found any information about Project Blue Book that most people in the public may not have heard about?
Well, I worked at Battelle Memorial Institute, and they're who did the study of UFOs called the Special Report Number 14. And it was a real good study that used all the information collected from Project Blue Book. And Battelle Memorial Institute is a scientific research organization, and they hired real top scientists to do this. And this was a top secret component of Project Blue Book. And what their objective was is to understand UFOs, and they took the reports from Project Blue Book. They had about 13,000 just took about 3,000 of the best ones and did a scientific analysis where they took real specific things, the real concrete things, and developed a questionnaire where they could get a lot of detailed information from the reports, and had people fill out reports. And said, these included such things as color, number, duration of observation, brightness, shape, and speed, and things like that that were fairly concrete. I mean, if you saw it for a while, you'd be able to know what color it was and how many you saw and that sort of thing. And they had to develop this questionnaire to get real good information, like hardcore information. And then they did a statistical study on that. And what they discovered was that they statistically compared these characteristics between objects that had never been, they'd never been able to identify, and ones that were later identified, and used these two categories and compared them statistically by chi-square, which is a standard statistical method. And they turn out really, really significantly different, which like one out of a billion, and I went through and recalculated, and I think it was more like one of a trillion chances that they are not prosaic objects, that UFOs are something different from airplanes and all that. But then there was a whistleblower that released a part of the study, and it became public. And then after that, they convened, well, it was before that, they were having the Robertson panel, and the Robertson panel was sort of set up by the government to debunk the whole thing. And they had some real top scientists that were well-known top scientists, but the scientists weren't anybody that knew anything about UFOs. And the data that they gave the scientists wasn't good. And what the whistleblower did was release a memo from one of the heads of the study saying that the data isn't ready yet. Don't do this. Don't have the, you know. And so they did it anyway and had the Robertson panel. And the Robertson panel decreed that UFOs don't exist, basically. They're no threat to national security or whatever. And they bunked the whole thing, which was, that was just a setup because they didn't have the data.
Yeah, wow, that's very interesting. Now, one thing I wanted to ask you is something I find interesting about the whole phenomenon is how it has changed over the decades. It seems like, you know, in the 40s, 50s, it used to be just strictly saucers. Then we started seeing different things like Tic Tacs, and now we just sometimes we see these light ships and just these, it looks like plasma and energy balls. What do you think is going on with that? Do you think that the phenomenon kind of is connected to our consciousness, like researchers like Grant Cameron tend to think? I believe that as well. And it kind of changes along with the collective conscious of humanity? Or do you think it is just all different types of, I guess, craft that is out there? Or do you think that they appear differently to adjust with our technology, the way our technology advances? What are your thoughts on that?
My thoughts are that as we become more advanced and know more technology, well, then we compare that to what's known about UFOs, and we apply our ideas of technology to UFOs and interpret it different ways. I mean, like hundreds of years ago, they said meteors didn't exist and things, although everybody saw them. And then they decided that meteors exist and that sort of thing. And now, you know, if you saw a little glowing object, you'd call it an orb, or you saw a bigger one, it'd be a UFO. Well, I think it's something you interpret with your own knowledge. And it depends on the culture, and maybe UFOs are influencing the culture more than they're influencing individual people.
Now, as far as what's going on today, do you think there is an intentional slow drip disclosure coming out of our government? We've had these leaks such as the Admiral Wilson leak. We've got the To the Stars Academy supposedly working on exotic materials with the Pentagon. And it just all seems very strange that, you know, we would have our government coming out and telling us about this, which I don't trust myself. But I'd like to get your thoughts on this. Do you think it's a slow drip disclosure? Do you think that it's going to go anywhere? Or do you think it's just another trend that we see over the decades?
I'd say it's a little better than it used to be, because the government was always saying, well, they don't exist. You're insane. You're crazy. And right. Now they do have that Tic Tac object and everything, and it's on radar. And they've calculated that the object was going at almost 13,000 G forces and things like that. And so they're disclosing a little bit. I mean, that's coming from the DIA. But I think, you know, just from my experience back then, I think the DIA has much better material than anything that's been disclosed. I mean, just because I worked there and I knew what they were doing, and I think, you know, it's way past what I was doing then, but I think they would have much better material than anybody's released.
What are your thoughts on that these ships, or whatever they are, may not be coming from a different planet or, some far-off galaxy or something like that, that they may be traveling interdimensionally just beyond our visible spectrum? What are your thoughts on that?
Well, when my sister and I had that experience we had, I did get a picture of the object. And I was a professional photo analyst, and so I analyzed my photograph. And I couldn't understand it all at first, but I had a Polaroid, and it took a time exposure. And in the time exposure, I got two blinks of it. The thing was blinking with the windows going off, but it was so far away, you couldn't see the individual windows, but I still could get two blinks. But the two blinks were funny because they were both composed of two traces instead of one. And all I saw was one. And so I concluded from that there was a light there that wasn't in the visual range. And I checked with the Polaroid company, and they said, yes, a light in a certain range would be photographed, but you couldn't see it. And so and then also my sister had said that when we stopped, that it had shown a light in the car. And so I thought at that time, there may be some, this was back a long time ago before lasers, when lasers were just barely known, so it wasn't laser that we thought about, but that maybe part of this is lasers technology way above us, but maybe some of it, like when UFOs disappear, when they travel at, you know, unbelievable speeds, that some of this may just be projected images that we see when we, I mean, I don't know why they're giving us projected images, but I wonder about that. And so I think there's all kinds of possibilities besides just being craft. I mean, I'm sure there's craft, but there may be a lot of other things too, and it may be a lot more advanced than, you know, physical craft like we think of.
Definitely. And what about the possibilities of the USOs, the underwater unidentified objects? We hear a lot of accounts lately of objects traveling at very high speed and not slowing down to enter the water. Do you think that's possible that they could have some type of underwater civilization or something possibly like along those lines?
Well, you see, it's hard to say what UFOs are to start with, whether they're in air or whether they're in water, because, you know, there's reports of things coming through walls and things like that. And if they come through walls, well, you know, they can go through water. And so you wonder exactly what, if there's some type of different matter or what exactly goes on. I mean, it's just going with by the reports. And like with my sister and I, we just woke up and this thing was in the room. Well, all the windows were shut and everything else. How did it get in the room? There wasn't a storm or anything going on. And things like that, you just wonder if they're exactly the type of material that we're that we are sensitive to, or whether there's something else.
Very well said. And one final question for you before I let you go tonight. Have you ever had any, I guess you could say harassment or surveillance or anything odd happen to you possibly because of the research you're doing?
I had off and on. Once when I was at Wright-Patterson, I took photos of the buildings in the secured area. And I was allowed on the base, and I didn't ask anybody. I just snuck around, took pictures. And then I published them in a UFO thing, and which probably what I wasn't supposed to do. But anyway, just about a day or two after I published them, well, I live next to a recreation area. Well, this T-38 jet plane, which is a supersonic jet, came up along my road and dive bombed my house. And it's something you can, I mean, it dove right at my house and I could hear it. And the house shook and everything. And I just thought it was the end of the world right then. And I didn't have any cameras loaded, but I got a camera loaded real fast and ran out and got a picture. And I lived by a recreation area where nobody should do anything like that. And there was a stunt pilot, and I got a picture of the stunt pilot and the jet. Then I ran back in, and the jet was still circling. And I managed to get a video camera loaded real fast and got back out there. And I got a good picture of the jet, and I also got the stunt pilot in the same film. And then I jumped over the fence and was trying to get pictures. And my neighbors were standing out there with their mouths open, just as amazed as I was. And I asked them what was going on, and they had seen the whole thing, and they said, "It dive bombed your house." And so I got that on the film too, which I was real happy about. And while I was talking to him, the thing was still circling. And I don't think it could have come from any place except Wright-Patterson. And, you know, I kind of wondered if if somebody was telling me to stop or something.
Yeah, it's their way of telling you don't take pictures here.
Yeah, but I got the whole thing. So anyway.
That's great. Well, Dr. Scott, thank you so much for coming on tonight. That was fascinating information, and I'd love to have you back on in the future.
Well, thank you very much. I would certainly love to be on.
Well, that would be great, and you enjoy the rest of your night.